It's time for WHTC Money Matters with Kerry Cooley and Jack Godfrey from the Cooley Godfrey Investment Group of Zeeland. The opinions voiced in this show are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, financial advisor, or tax advisor prior to investing. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, members FINRA and SIPC. Now that we got the legal stuff out of the way, here are the guys cooler than the paid-off mortgage. Your hosts of WHTC Money Matters, Kerry Cooley and Jack Godfrey.
Good morning, Holland, Zealand, and welcome to WHTC Money Matters. This is your host, Kerry Cooley.
And this is Jack Godfrey. Today's show is going to be life insurance. How much do you need? Why you need it? What's the strategy? We have questions to go over today about life insurance. So just to let you know, today's show is pre-recorded for July 26th. Both Kerry and I will be off that day. And so today it's pre-recorded, but we're talking about life insurance. We have four segments to go through. We're going to talk about the definition of life insurance, some strategic talk about life insurance. We're going to go why you need life insurance. Then we'll go over about 12, 15 questions that people have asked us over the years about life insurance. So four different segments, 7-minute, a 10-minute, and two 12-minute segments to go over life insurance. So again, it's pre-recorded. And Kerry, let's talk about the different types of life insurance.
And Jack, you know, that it's a great place to start because that is one of the most common questions we do get asked. You know, what is the difference? What's the difference between these type of insurance? And probably the most, you know, I wouldn't say, you know, most common and probably the easiest to explain would be term insurance. And term insurance is something that when a person buys the insurance, this insurance is good for a certain period of time, certain length of time, whether it be 5, 10, 15, 20 years.
30.
30, yep. They go out to 30 now. And you pay a set premium per year on that. And at the end of that length of time, you don't have life insurance. Some are guaranteed renewable, but then the premium jumps way up. So you're locking in a set rate for a set period of time.
Right, and the premium amount is based on really three things: the age,
mm-hmm.
the length of time, and your health at the time of application.
Yep.
So that's really term insurance. You buy it for a specific time frame. Again, Kerry mentioned 10, or it's usually 10 minimum, not so much 5, but 10, 15, 20, 25, 30. I think there are some insurance policies out there for 40, but I haven't seen too many of them. But so, you know, mostly people do 10, 20, or 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And some do 15 or 25. But so, again, it's and we'll get into strategy later, but it is term. It's usually the cheapest there. But it's based, again, on your age, your health, and the number of years that you're going to be insured for.
Yeah, it's that simple. And a big determining factor, as Jack said, for your premium is your health. You always, when you go out and get life insurance, you have to go through a screening process and, you know, blood work and the health, you know, background check to determine what that premium will be. So when you get a quote on term insurance, that quote could be higher or lower depending on how all the numbers come in on the health screening. Now, the second type of insurance out there is whole life. Different than term. Remember, we said term was good for a set number of years, where whole life is good for your entire lifespan. And similar to term, but you purchase a policy to cover your whole life, not just a set period of time. And what's nice, the premiums remain level, but because it's over your whole life, the premiums are going to be quite a bit higher than term, are some of the common differences between term and whole life. What else, Jack?
Well, I mean, today, when you write a whole life policy, typically the insurance company asks Kerry and I two questions. Is it going to be based on 100-year life? Or now, the second one is based on 110-year life. So now we're insuring people for 110 years. That is the new policy. Used to be 90, then it went to 100, now it's 110. So those, as Carrie mentioned, it's a level, typically a level policy for the whole of your life. So you're going to pay this policy, and what this does is you have really two costs of insurance. Well, really, really two costs of insurance. The policy itself is what you're paying for. Is the company is betting on you're going to die early, you're betting you're going to die later. And then you have a policy fee. So that's another cost. You have a policy fee that gets charged every year. It's a minimal fee, $30, $50, $100 per year. It's a typical. And then you get charged for, again, your health structure in all of your life. So it, and then what's above and beyond the cost of insurance is what goes into a thing called a cash bucket.
Mm-hmm. And usually has a low guaranteed interest rate on that.
Yep.
And, you know, many companies offer that. So when you pay that premium in, part of that, like Jack said, goes to pay for the life insurance administrative costs, but part of it goes into a cash bucket and it builds up that cash with the dividends and interest on top of that. And that's one way that the policy will make a little bit of money.
Yep. And usually the policy at a certain age begins to now cut into your cash value. So at some point in time, it's going to be to zero your cash value. And then your premium is going to be, all of your premium is going to go towards buying your whole life.
Let's quick cover the other two types of whole life that are out there. You have universal life and variable life. Universal life is a lot like whole life, but you decide how much you want to put in over and above a minimum premium. So you can put more money in, kind of like a savings bucket. And then the company chooses the investment vehicle, and which is generally restricted to bonds and or mortgage type of investments. That's the universal life in a nutshell. And then you have variable life, which is a variable policy. There is usually a wider selection of investment products in this.
I mean, it's almost like buying a mutual fund with a life insurance wrapper to it.
That's a good way to put it. So, you know, universal and variable are just two other types of whole life with different means of earning interest on your money that are in it. So, you know, listeners, we need to take a short break here. We're talking different types of life insurance, and then we're going to be right back with some more details and strategies on where and how you would use this life insurance. You're listening to WHTC Money Matters. Welcome back, listeners. You're listening to WHTC Money Matters. This is Carrie Cooley.
And this is Jack Godfrey. Today's show is a pre-recorded show for July 26. We're talking about life insurance, what it is, what's the strategy, how much do you need. We're going to go over now strategies of life insurance. We went through the different kinds of life insurance. We reviewed term, whole life, universal life, and variable life. All of those have different strategic things that the reason why you would buy those. So kind of the strategy, you know, we're talking about here, again, this pre-recorded show for July 26 is, what camp are you in? There's two camps. Insurance falls into really two categories. One is term insurance or pure insurance coverage for all of your life. That's really what it is, Carrie.
Mm-hmm. It is. And in the other big difference, as we talked about, cost. Term is much lower in cost, and whole life is going to be quite a bit higher in cost. And, you know, people say, well, what type should I buy? And we're going to get into that a little bit more. And, you know, whole life is not right for everybody. Term is not right for everybody. It needs to fit your unique situation here. And another thing is, we have to remember that insurance is sold, not bought. And that why that is that agents sell the vast majority of life insurance policies, you know, that are written in the U.S. because the life insurance industry has a vested interest in that. We have to remember that. And they're pushing for higher commissions, higher profit on whole life policies is where they make the most money. So term, you don't make much. Whole life, you do. So one of the strategies when you look at that, you need to realize what's the right fit, what's the right type of insurance, and that insurance is sold, not bought, and you need to look at what fits for you.
Yeah, and lots of times, you know, people will, you know, there's really, you know, Carrie and I sell life insurance. We don't usually sell it unless we think there's a drastic need out there. So, you know, typically our insurance is term insurance. That's the majority of what we sell. But whole life is truly more expensive than term insurance because it is for all of your life, where term is for a set period. So, and then policies, you know, are, you know, they involve a guaranteed interest rate with a floor minimum. Like, for example, I have a whole life that my mom bought me. This was probably 20 years ago. And it's a whole of the life. It's never paid up. And I use it just for, it's going to be a nice funeral.
Yeah.
So it's, I use that for funeral expenses, funeral party. I also have a whole life policy that my parents bought for me when I was just born. It's I pay $11 a year. It's a $1,000 policy, and I think I have like $1,400 now it's worth because the cash value is built up. So it's $11.43.
Okay.
And that's just kind of a sentimental $11.43. But it has a guaranteed interest rate of 4%, which is
That's pretty good nowadays.
That's my strategy. But whole life is more expensive, but it has some things that, you know, whole life sometimes backs people into a corner because they can't usually afford what they really need because they look at the premium. So almost you got to think, you know, maybe I should buy term and not whole life because I really do need $500,000, but they can't afford $500,000.
Oh, exactly.
So that's where we come in the dilemma of we think you ought to buy this or this, where we, you know, we say insurance is usually not bought, it's sold because you're trying to fit somebody into a particular box. That's what you're trying to do.
The other thing is, you know, you have to look at what your debt is out there and buy what you need and then look at what you can afford is some of the two questions that we ask our clients to consider when looking at life insurance. And you have to realize when buying whole life insurance, it is built around assumptions. It's built around assumptions that it will make a certain interest rate on your money that you put in. It's simply, in a way, the returns that are quoted by an agent are simply guesses and not reality. You don't know that until it happens. So some companies, you know, keep these guesses of future returns on the high side to attract more buyers, and that's not right. You need to err on the side of a lower rate of return because cost of whole life, a lot of that money is eaten up in cost of insurance. It's not going into that cash bucket. So remember, those policies are built on assumptions. And when you run these, what we call hypothetical illustrations on these life insurance policies, look at a lower interest rate. We use lower rates of return. And that way, things are going to be much more realistic and there will be less surprises in the future.
Yeah, what Kerry's talking about is, you know, the assumptions. Because right now, if you're listening to this show, we're talking about life insurance is pre-recorded for July 26th. But if you look and you have an older policy, some of those older policies, Kerry, were guaranteed at 6, 7, 8%. That's when they ran a hypothetical.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they ran the hypothetical, they based it on that interest rate. Then there was a floor. And a lot of those floors are maybe 4 or 3%. So what that means is this policy is going to blow up, which that means you're not going to pay enough in to keep this policy enforced.
So that means you need to pay more in, usually, or let the policy lapse,
right,
which is sometimes may not be a good thing because then all of a sudden, if you're not insurable anymore, you could be out life insurance.
I've had many of these occur where people are now 75 and they get that dreaded letter that says, "We understand that we've had your policy and thank you very much for your business for the last 40 years. However, things in the, you know, a little clause in the policy, however, means we're going to charge you more, or we're going to pay you out because the cash flow is gone now. It's gone."
Mm-hmm.
They're going to send you a letter typically 6 or 8 months before the policy cash value is gone. So typically, you better pay attention to your statement that you get because cash value is on your statement. You're going to get a statement typically once a year.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you're going to get, a statement.
Yeah.
And if you're listening out there, you need to look at your in-force illustration. In-force illustration is a new hypothetical.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to tell you where you're at.
Well, and in-force means you contact the insurance company and have them run an in-force illustration so that you can see actually how your policy has been performing. Another thing that Jack and I are very adamant about is keep your investing and your insurance strictly separate. meaning that don't use insurance as an investment vehicle. Insurance is primarily a death benefit in the case of life insurance. So keep those two separate. It's just, you know, insurance is costly. It's better to keep them separate and look at them as two different buckets.
Yeah, because, you know, a lot of people get, you know, sell you on the fact that this is truly an investment. Then you got the other people on the other side saying, well, why do these investments cost so much money? Again, it's the insurance cost. And then you also have the premium cost, which is, you know, pays for some of the extra stuff that the insurance costs. And then you have the cash value cost, which means, are you going to invest in something or are you just going to get an interest rate return? So, you know, it's we have to take a look at what's best for you. And that's, you know, when we say keep it separate, it's a lot better buying mutual funds on your own because it is a lot cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
It is a lot cheaper.
Yeah, a lot better places to invest. Now, we mentioned this earlier. Buy enough insurance, buy enough term coverage to fill your needs, which says if you have debt of $300,000 and you have kids at home, maybe you need to have a policy to pay off that debt plus some money that your spouse can use to supplement the income that's lost while you're gone if the other one's the earner. And then match the term of the policy to your needs. So let's say a person's 40 years old. They need it for the next 20 years. Get a 20-year policy, carries you to 60 years of old age, and then the goal is to be debt-free, and then things, you know, are different. Then you won't need as much life insurance. So you need to look at buy enough to cover and match the term of the policy or other two strategies there.
No, that's exactly correct. So the next thing is match the term with your policy, which we just talked about. And the best time to buy this is, one, when you're healthy, and when you're healthy and you stop smoking. So that is very important. Is I ask people, do you smoke? Oh, yeah, but I've really quit for 2 weeks. I go, nope, you need to be smoke-free for a year.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're going to ask you, did you smoke and have you stopped? And have you stopped over a year? That's a crucial thing. Then are you healthy? That means, you know, you don't have some of those older age diseases, diabetes, obesity, some of those things, because they're going to nick you pretty heavy if you have some of those issues.
Yeah. So, you know, so buy when you're healthy and you buy early, but don't buy until you have dependents is sometimes a good rule of thumb.
Dependents, or, you know, don't buy until you have a lot of debt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that could be a case as well. Or the major thing is where you have one spouse making all the money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have a couple kids that are doctors. I mean, we really overinsured them.
You know, another thing is tell the truth, because on your application, telling the truth will give you a true picture of what your rates will be. If you kind of hee-haw around, kind of go, well, what about this? You know, they'll find it out through your medical records and adjust things. So those are some strategies to look at when going out looking and buying insurance. So listeners, we're going to be back with why people need life insurance. And we're going to talk about some ideas there, thoughts. So stay tuned for our next segment. You're listening to WHTC Money Matters. Welcome back, listeners. You're listening to WHTC Money Matters. We're talking today about why people need life insurance. And we've covered what different types of life insurance. We talked about some strategies. This segment, we're going to talk about why people, you know, need life insurance. So, Jack, let's talk about why people need life insurance.
Yeah, first of all, this is a recorded show for July 26. Again, we're talking about life insurance, and then we're talking about, you know, really, why do people need life insurance? And if you're listening today, you know, belly up to the table, get a pen and paper in, and let's talk about strategies of your particular life and sit back and you kind of say, do I really need it? I don't need it. You know, Carrie and I are both in the camp of really looking at term insurance first, because it is for a period of where you need it. So, you know, there's permanent life insurance. You know, permanent life insurance is, you know, not term insurance. It's permanent. It goes on your balance sheet. It's an asset that you own, because we know that if you pay for this insurance, you're going to have some cash value that you can get to. So that's one strategy of why people buy life insurance, is they know that they can fall back on having something to show for this all the years they paid up. But then you look at the other side, Carrie, it's more expensive. And there's another downfall today in buying this permanent life insurance, is because rates are low. Insurance companies have to invest this money that you put into a pot. And they have to have reserves. And they have to also calculate how are they, you know, they have actuaries that say, okay, here's the risk we're going to take given this year's interest rates and this year's investments. And so interest rates continue to be at really zero. So they have to go out there and buy treasuries. They have to go out there and buy low duration bonds. They have to go out there and buy very secure debt to avoid be available to pay this policy out sometime in the future. And if they have healthy people, they're betting you're going to live. You're betting you're going to die. That's why you have the insurance. So permanent life insurance is one of those permanent. And again, we're talking about variable life, universal life, whole life insurance. You know, we feel that this fits into, you know, one more category is where we tend to write some of this is if a person is high net worth, very high net worth, you want to buy one of these policies because you can take what you put in and gain multiples on what you're going to take out when you die. Multiples. Mm-hmm. So high net worth, they're not looking to really, do they need it? Nope, but it's a strategy because when you take a look at life insurance is still tax-free money. So you're really putting money into something that your beneficiaries are going to get absolutely tax-free. That's a strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Is it costly? Yes. But you take a look at a person who's 60 years old, has an average life, a guy of 87, 83, they're going to pay for this for 20, 23 years. You look at your premium, look at what you're going to take out. It's multiples. Means that you're going to put in a lot less than you're going to get out tax-free.
Mm-hmm.
This is the only vehicle that you're going to get tax-free. Now, you got to go back and say, well, what about mutual funds? Yep. You're going to get a step up in basis on a mutual fund. So is that tax-free? Yes. Really comes out. Because you're going to get a step up in basis. But the multiples, again, of what it takes to invest in a mutual fund with some risk in there, whole life policy says, we know what you're going to get at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of a strategy of why people buy permanent life insurance. And maybe one more, Kerry, which you might want to talk about is life access.
Well, life access is something out there that is fairly new to the insurance industry. And when I say fairly new, it's probably over 5 years, 10 years approximately it's been around. And what Jack is saying by a life access is that a person can go out and buy a life insurance policy, a whole life insurance policy that has attached to it as a rider, what's called a life access rider, which is really payment for long-term care in assisted living. So for example, if you have a policy that has a death benefit of $500,000, you can usually draw out 2% of that per month for long-term care. So that'd be $10,000 a month in this example. So for example, if I would go in and if I would never use it, my beneficiaries get the $500,000 tax-free. But if I go in and use part of this life insurance and the life access rider, and let's say I use $200,000 of that for long-term care and then pass away, there's still $300,000 death benefit. Now, if I use all of that $500,000, then there's no death benefit at the end. But it's a great way that we have been seeing in the industry, instead of going out and buying long-term care all by itself, which has become very expensive, and you know, there's no death benefit there. A life insurance with a life access rider has been another good alternative for people to look at buying. And it doesn't mean you need to run out and buy a new policy. Jack, we've done this before. You know, a person has an old policy with a cash value that's been around for, you know, 10, 20 years and has a nice cash value. You can take that and do a 1035 exchange, which is a tax-free exchange to a new policy. And if you're in good health, a lot of times you can get a policy that's better, meaning has a higher death benefit, has a life access rider, and the premiums would probably be close to the same or even lower because the quality of life and people are living longer has reduced insurance premiums. So that's something for our listeners out there, Jack, that I want them to think about. If they have a policy out there that's whole life, just to take a look at it and to see what their cash value is and have it reviewed. Just like you review your investments, you need to go out there and also review your life insurance that is out there to make sure that beneficiaries are correct, Do you have cash value? Does it make sense to switch this over and have long life access rider for it? Those are all things you need to review on a regular basis.
Yeah, so if you're listening out there, just go to your policy, look at last year's or this year's statement, and it's going to tell you the cash value, especially those policies that have been out there 10 or 15 years. Look at those cash values. Do a review with your insurance agent or review with us, whatever. And we're going to say, you know, this cash value is going to jumpstart you to the next level. And sometimes, you know, another thing, Carrie, is you can also take, you know, their strategy is here. You can take this 1035 and 1035 that into an annuity.
Mm-hmm.
You can also 1035 that, so you don't really need the life insurance anymore, but you have a cash value. You can take that lump sum and say, we're going to 1035 that into a variable annuity. Your life insurance rider's gone. You're not going to pay any more premiums. So now you're going to use that as an investment tool.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now you've had all these years of life insurance, which is a multiple of what you paid in. Now you've got this cash value. Take this to a variable annuity and get some guaranteed income, some guaranteed withdrawal. And that's another strategy.
Well, yeah, there's all different, you know, other reasons people use life insurance. They use it. Some people use it to avoid market risk. You know, a life insurance policy, a whole life especially, has a guaranteed income. You have a fixed return as opposed to fluctuation of the market. So that's another area. Another great thing is people sometimes don't remember, you know, life insurance, naming beneficiaries on a life insurance avoids probate, which means that this life insurance, if you have beneficiaries named on it, that money goes right to your beneficiaries, avoids probate. And another thing, it is used a lot to replace, you know, earned income and the cash flow when a person passes away and you leave a spouse at home, especially with kids.
Well, another thing, you know, when you want to take a look at that variable or universal life policies is, one, sometimes high risk people for litigation use this for a way to put this in an irrevocable trust. And therefore, litigation is unable to get to this because you do not personally have access to the money. It's in a permanent life irrevocable trust. I've also done a few of these, Carrie, where you have farmers and you have business people who own, you know, not the farmers are business people, they are. But if you look at some of the fruit farmers around here who have very valuable land right next door to corporate usage. So they're still being taxed and zoned as a residential and farming. However, they have the ability to pay taxes on this when it steps up to maybe a corporate rate. Maybe when I say corporate rate, that means you have the ability to sell it across the street. So all of a sudden, you know, you have a son who inherits ground worth, say, $6 million, and now your exposure to trust, you know, your trust only is guaranteed to $5 million. You have an exposure of $1 million out there that you got to pay estate taxes on. So, you know, you might want to think of using life insurance to pay for estate taxes. Now, that's a pretty high rate, but you talk about property. Property's pretty expensive today. So you want to buy this to pay for your costs of above the $5
million. Well, yeah, and there's a lot of different ways that life insurance will be used, and some can get pretty complicated, and I don't want to go into those complicated things here on the air, and those are things such as generational skipping limitations, charitable giving flexibility. Those are some other areas where families that have wealth that want to pass it on to the next generation or pass it on to charities and avoid some of the taxation and have a tax benefit to them, they use life insurance set up correctly in these to help different people out, whether it be family members, charitable organizations, is another means that life insurance can be used as a great strategy to pass wealth on.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we talked about eliminating estate taxes, that's one of them. And also, some people who do not have children, do not have grandchildren, you know, they think this is a way to pay for their caregivers, pay for setting up a trust at the end of their life. So, you know, there's some more strategies of helping people in need after you pass away.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of ways out there. Now, listeners, as we mentioned before, we want to emphasize that life insurance, term, whole life, universal, variable, you need to go out there and find what fits for you and what you need. And everybody's going to be different. We're not recommending that people need to go out and buy life insurance. We're not saying that. We're just helping educate you on some different ideas, understanding what life insurance is, and the different terms that are involved along with different strategies. And listeners, we're going to come up to our last section here. We've kind of reversed things here. We are taking a lot of questions that we've been asked over the years at our business and going to answer them at the end. We wanted to help educate you first about the life insurance, come up with some strategies. Now we're going to be answering your questions. So listeners, stay tuned for the last section. You're listening to WHTC Money Matters. Welcome back, listeners, to WHTC Money Matters. This is Kerry Cooley.
And Jack Godfrey. Today's show, we're talking about life insurance. And to remind you once again, and lastly, this show is a pre-recorded show for July 26th. And we went through what types of life insurance are out there, the strategy of life insurance, who needs it, why you need it, some different parameters that make sense. We've talked about the usage of whole life and universal life. We've talked about the strategies of estate avoidance, being able to use it on your cash balance sheet, avoiding, lawsuits, which are held in irrevocable trusts, you being philanthropic with life insurance. However, when you talk about life insurance, and you've had this for a while, one thing that we haven't talked about is the rate charts. That means they're going to say insurance is based on your age, your health, and how long you want it. But believe me, because if you've had a policy for 30 years, you've been paying this for 30 years, I can guarantee you 30 years ago, people didn't think they're going to live to 87, 90, 100 years old. So you need to have your insurance reviewed.
Oh, all the time. And this is something that maybe not every year, but if there's been major life events that have changed, widowed, divorced, that's a good time to go in and check to make sure that you have the correct beneficiaries down, see if they need to be changed. Now, one of the questions that many of our listeners and clients have asked is, are withdrawals from a cash value life insurance, so we're talking about a whole life policy or policy like variable or universal that has cash value built on it, is that cash value, if you draw that out, is that ever tax-free?
The answer is maybe.
That is correct.
The answer is maybe. It depends on how much you've paid in, how much the policy's grown. And so if you've paid in exactly what the insurance costs and you've got a cash value above that, then that could potentially come out free cash. And that's one of the strategies of professional life insurance people is, okay, so this is what they tell you. We're going to invest this money and you're going to be able to take money out of this for your life tax-free. Well, that's kind of true. The thing you got to worry about is, one, you still got to keep the policy in force. Mm-hmm. You still got to keep the policy in force. So you're still paying a premium. So that's a cost. So some of it's coming out free, but you still got to keep. Well, let's say, why don't you just use what we've got and take the interest of what you've got and pay for the premium? Well, that works out really good, but the cost of insurance goes up every year. So it's a fine line of you taking this out, keeping the insurance enforced, and how much are you able to take out dwindles every year because the insurance costs go up every year. Mm-hmm. And what you get, if you're taking money out of this, you have to think of, how can I keep it enforced? I mean, you got to pay the premium. How much can I take out? So it's a maybe question, but you got to keep it enforced.
Oh, exactly. Now, I know this isn't dealing with cash value, but when there is a death and the beneficiary receives that death benefit of the life insurance, that's tax-free.
It's tax-free. Nope, yep. It's tax-free. So there's benefits, but we want to make sure that you understand what you're buying out there. And could I ever have too much life insurance? Oh, absolutely. We see people that are insurance poor. And typically how we get them is they come in for a review. They might not be customers. They've heard us on this radio show. We've gotten a referral to come in and see Jack and Carrie. And then we say, well, where are your investments? Well, we invest through life insurance. And we go, what? And they're insurance poor. All of their money goes to buy insurance, life insurance. And they think this insurance they got is a great investment.
Yeah, and they don't know any different.
And they don't know any different, but they've been sold a bunch of goods here. We say, what are you talking about? How much do you really need?
Exactly.
Then we back in to how much they need, why they need it, the strategy. So, yeah, you can have too much life insurance if you're sold way too much life insurance.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, along with that, this is another common question, and probably our listeners are thinking about this, too, if they have children. You know, should I buy life insurance for my child? You see advertisements on TV about buying, I think Gerber has it, for a newborn, you can buy life insurance. And, you know, it's not that it's a bad thing, but you need to really think about buying life insurance. I remember my dad buying life insurance like this when I was born. It was $5,000 or $10,000. It was supposed to have a cash value when I went to college of around $5,000. And if I died, my parents got $10,000. So it's really there to pay for funeral costs if I should pass away. Or like my dad was thinking, if I got to be 18 off to college, I'd have $5,000 there. Well, that was based on those illustrations, which were run at too high a numbers, and all I got was $1,800 out of it for college. So
that illustration didn't work out.
It did not work out. Yeah. So normally, buying, if you have enough other monies and investments, you don't need to buy life insurance for your child.
But here's how it's sold. It's sold the fact that if your child is ever not insurable, and that's how insurance people who sell life insurance for a business say, well, if your child's not ever insurable at whatever age, you're never going to get life insurance, which that's true. That is absolutely, that's a true statement, but they kind of fear you into convincing you to buy a policy you probably don't need or should you buy. Everything is a risk. On the other hand, in the investment side of our business, we see people running ads on TV, on the radio, in invitations for dinners to make you afraid of this market that we have today, making you afraid to say, we will guarantee that you have this great investment for the rest of your life and you don't need to be fearful of the market,
mm-hmm.
which is really insurance.
Yeah. Yep. You know, how about this, Jack? Can a charity be named as a beneficiary on a life insurance
policy?
Absolutely.
Many people do that.
Yeah. You can name anybody.
Yep. You can name anybody, and charity is a great thing to name. So, you know, you're getting down towards the end of your life, and you know, we have a lot of these customers, Carrie, who have a lot of money. They're not spending it. And one of the strategies, and they want to give money to the church. And giving money to the church is, we always encourage that, to be philanthropic and giving and passing forward. Is they're going to give maybe their life insurance, maybe their annuity policy, maybe another beneficiary off their IRA, and they're going to get this tax-free. It's a beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. So, yes, it is. It's a way to pass on money with no cost to those people receiving it.
Well, what's pretty cool about it is, yeah, you can name a charity as a beneficiary. You can split up the beneficiaries. You could have the charity receive 20% of the benefit. You can split it up in different ways to different charities, or split up between a charity and your kids. You can change that. You can update that. You can it doesn't have to be just one beneficiary.
But here, you know, let's get right to the meat of this question, because a lot of this meat comes down to the fact that what's best for your kids as well. Do you want them to inherit this, or this? So we got to say life insurance, that comes out tax-free. Pretty nice thing to give your kids. You got a Roth IRA versus traditional. Roth IRA, no taxes to your kids. Probably need to leave a Roth to your kids. Traditional IRA, give it to the church. No tax consequences to the church. So you want to think, how is this going to help the most important people in your life?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And who's going to be able to take advantage of this the most? So when you need life insurance, or you've got life insurance and you're going to pass it on, that is one of the highest, most valuable things that you can pass on, because it passes on no taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Right next to that is a Roth IRA. After that, you're going to probably pay some taxes on stuff. Of course, if you're in a brokerage account, you also get that as a step-up in basis. So the last thing you probably want to give to your kids, we're talking about insurance, Roth, last thing you want to give them is a traditional IRA, if you have the ability.
Yeah, yep.
If that's all you got, you give it to the kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, you know, if people become disabled, does a person that has a life insurance policy still have to pay premium? Well,
maybe.
Maybe, exactly. Another maybe. Some life insurance companies and policies, I should say, have a waiver of premium if you're disabled. And if you've, you know, put that in the policy and have that rider in the policy, which means policy probably costs a little bit more to have that specific rider, means that if you become disabled, the life insurance is still there, but you don't have to pay premium. But if you don't have that rider there, yes, you still need to keep paying premium. So that's depends on how that life insurance is built and structured.
Next question, will I be taxed on the growth of my cash flow on my life insurance? No. Will I pay tax on the dividends of my policy? No. So, you know, if you have life insurance and you're building up those cash dividends, because, again, you're going to see on a whole life policy, it's going to say, we're going to give you this rate of interest for this long, then it could drop to a floor, or we're guaranteeing this forever. Those are not taxed.
Well, and that's saying the dividends and everything is staying in the policy and
yep.
building up.
Right.
Here's another one. A lot of times when a person works for an employer, the employer will have term life insurance on that person. And a question comes up, if I leave that company, can I take the life insurance policy with me? And that's a maybe.
That's a real big maybe. In most cases, no.
Yeah. Yep.
If you're highly compensated, one of the executives, typically yes. Because that's outside the normal situation where they're buying a life insurance policy on you because you're a highly compensated, highly needed person. So typically that is you can take it with. But a typical person is term insurance. You have to renew every year.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of pros and cons of buying life insurance through your employer. A lot of times it's less expensive because it's a group rate. And the other flip side of it, the rate goes up every year because it's a rising premium every year.
Because of your age.
Yeah, and a lot of times you can't take it with you when you leave the company, and then you may not be insurable anymore. So there's pros and cons. So you have to evaluate your specific situation that you're in.
So lastly, we're coming to the end of our show. Lastly, we're going to talk about how much life insurance do we need. That's really between you, your spouse, the debt, how long you think you're going to live, you know, include, you know, what you're going to need to pay off and what's the budget strategy, where the income is coming from at the end of life. Do you need to help your wife? If you're highly compensated, you better make sure that standard of living is maintained. Lots of variables.
There is. You know, listeners, thanks for listening to our show this week. It's been a pre-recorded show. We want to have you stay tuned and join us next week where we'll be back live on August 2nd. In that show, we'll be talking about IRA rollover warnings. So, again, listeners, thanks for listening to WHTC Money Matters. This is your host, Kerry Cooley.
And Jack Godfrey. We'll see you next week.